Joined us. You're listening to Women Writing for a Change. I'm Barbara Gray. My co-host tonight is Mary Pierce Brosmer, and we've just listened to two pieces by Diana Gill, and these were both about relatives and on the occasion of death in her family. Diana, the second piece about your grandmother is such a strong portrait, and there was a phrase that just jumped off the page at me, which is hide her anger, and made me think of so many women that have gone before us who were silenced or self-silencing. And I was wondering what your thoughts were about that. In particular, has it changed in your family?
I think it's taken several generations to change in my family. I think my grandmother's generation very much had many feelings that they couldn't express about their lives and felt powerless to change it. And I'm not sure that my mother's generation had much more success, but I believe that with the generation that I'm from, myself and my sisters and cousins, I think that we have a completely different view.
I wonder why. What's caused the change? And I'm really interested if it has something to do with writing, because I'm aware of how strong it's, as if the bottled up anger and grief of generations is poured forth in this incredible imagery, the store-bought cake, the ham platters, and nothing else.
I think that my sisters also have written in their lives also, and I think that being able to name what needs to be named is freeing.
Mm-hmm. I was aware as I was listening to it and reading the piece for tonight again was, I think it was Sharon Olds who talked about being a redemption junkie, and I think maybe I'm one, and there isn't, at the end of this piece, you don't offer me anything, and I'm not saying that you should, but I was really aware of that, that you just let us be with this whole mass of very powerful and painful imagery. There's nothing so wide as, there is no space as wide as grief. I think it was Pablo Neruda who said that. But I'm wondering if there's something in the writing itself or something in coming out of that and being able to say all that and leave it on the page that you look back. I think you wrote this a year ago.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very cathartic to be able to express a lot of things that I think just generations of women in my family have not been able to say. And my grandmother, I don't think there ever was a resolution to that grief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking about her at the end of this piece, curled up in an empty bed, and mm-hmm. also the image of her watching soap
operas, yeah. That never-ending mm-hmm. Circular kind of story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even the sound, for me, the sound of a soap opera on television just makes me feel really despairing, because it mm-hmm. feels like it's watching somebody else's life instead of living your own. And here, you know, this is a part of the imagery of this piece, of the Day of the Dead.
They also seem to be trapped in a cycle. Mm-hmm. And soap operas, there's never any getting out of that life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, this is the imagery here. The ham platters and pies. This was something we talked about before, Diana, knowing that if she said truth to them, and you talked about people who don't have a whole lot of space for truth. We were talking about that a little bit earlier. Can you say more about that?
I think that the truth was largely discouraged, I think, in my mother's generation as mm-hmm. well. And you put on a front and you put on a face and you keep a stiff upper lip and you don't let people see how you really feel.
Mm-hmm. Gee, and
that keeps them so trapped.
Mm-hmm. And I know that the origin of the costuming around Halloween was not that kind of mask. It was actually a celebration and a welcoming of the ancestors, but it's degenerated a lot in our culture into something that you go to Walgreens and pick up a mask. And you're also having a piece here about people who
That's
are
true.
Masking their feelings.
And I think in the arena that I grew up in, that the death was not something to be celebrated. It was not part of the natural cycle. It was something to be feared and something to be, you know, greatly grieved, and something that was not a positive part of the normal cycle.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of your quote, Barbara, from Phyllis McGinley about muddling toward sainthood.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it strikes me that that part of that journey is to be able to look at the whole journey, including the death, as mm-hmm. you know, as something that is whole and maybe even something to celebrate. And that is extremely difficult, especially when you've pushed down so much and when day-to-day survival is just everything. And that felt the case to me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there seems to be a lot about in doing drudgery towards sainthood from a particular time in history, a long time in history, actually, and I'm sure part of that was a physical survival. One of the things I was curious about was what your grandmother's physical life was like. Did she work on a farm? I mean, was it an agrarian situation, or was it that once removed from there and we were into the Industrial Revolution and the kinds of difficulties that came with
that? She was born in 1906, and I think she had her first child when she was 16. They were married at 16, and she had 7 children, and I think that was her life. I think the home, the hearth, I remember her always being in the kitchen and or hanging laundry. Yeah. I think that was yes. The subtotal of her life. She had no life external to that other than, you know, church on Sunday.
Yes.
And my grandfather had various careers, as he did try farming in Kentucky, mm-hmm. and eventually ended up being a carpenter, but it was very much hearth, home, and kitchen.
Well, and it sounds like he was self-supporting, so to speak, and so
right.
A challenging life in that way. Mm-hmm. I was very struck by 2 images in relation to each other in the first piece that you read, which I thought captured so well that ability of a young child to absorb everything that's going on around them, essentially without judging it. You know, someone's dying and it's Halloween, and those are almost kind of equal things in their life. Mm-hmm. And that's true for children. It really does that wonderfully. Mm-hmm. But this uncle of yours landing in a grand mal fit in front of the neighbors, and then that compared with the bits of grass that are flying from the lawnmower. Those 2 images were just marvelous with each other, and described that what must have been a rather stunning moment, because when someone dies very suddenly, mm-hmm. It is pretty stunning.
Yeah. I'm very admiring of this language, Diana, in that first piece. As the chill cut through the ragweed in Queen Anne's lace, that imagery is something that I particularly like. We're talking about doing readbacks in writing class, where we say back the words that seem to us that were particularly powerful, and that was one of my favorite images in that piece about your uncle, and I also am with Barbara on the idea of, and the kids are affected by this, and they also want to know if they can go Halloweening.
That's true.
So it's that holding both things and one in each hand and wondering if it's okay to do that, and probably it isn't in a lot of families. So thank you so much.
Yes.
It's really incredible
thank
work.
You.
Thanks
thank
for
you.
Being here.